Radio Dahl with Aaron from the Netherlands. Hi everyone, this is Arash and you're listening to Radio Dahl podcast. A podcast which used to be in Farsi, but this time, for the first time, we have a full episode in English. In this podcast, I talk with my friends around the globe to listen to their stories about living in different parts of the world and their experiences through this journey. So, about this podcast, I was curious. I was curious to know what it's like to live somewhere other than Iran. And it wasn't something that I could easily go and do and experience it by myself, because
to leave a country is like breaking out of jail.
Yes,
and to enter a country is like going through the eye of a needle.
So I started talking to my friends who had left the country and asked them some questions that I had about their experience. This podcast began when I decided to document these conversations. In that way, I'd like to describe it as some sort of long-form improvised conversations with my friend. Yeah. So, at first, the guests were my close friends, those who I mostly knew from college. And after a while, to my amazement, some strangers expressed their interest to participate in the podcast. So it started to get bigger and bigger. Italy, Portugal, Japan, South Africa, Sweden, Ireland, all are some of the countries we've covered in the past something like 40 episodes. And now we've reached this point that after something like 4 years, I had this chance to take this giant leap and have my first non-Farsi speaking guest. I consider myself so lucky that I had the chance to meet Aaron. He's so friendly, he knows how to express his thoughts clearly, and most importantly, he had so many interesting stories to tell. You'll listen, you'll find out. Since he's a podcast listener, convincing him to participate in one of the episodes was rather easy, and I appreciate his trust in me for being, as I said already, our first non-Farsi speaking guest. We start the conversation by some questions about Aaron's childhood in the Netherlands, his teenage years in school, and his first job in his hometown. Things start to get more fascinating when he starts his journey as a backpacker to Australia. Listen, I hope you enjoyed, and please share your feedbacks with me. You can find Radio Dahl, D-A-A-L, on Twitter and Instagram. Also, you can find supplementary content and title of the topics we discussed for each episode in our website. So, without further ado, let's go and listen to this episode with Aaron from Holland.
I don't know. I think the best thing you can always do is just be self-deprecating rather than...
Self-deprecating?
So, yeah, making fun of yourself rather than making fun of others.
It's
a tough interview.
Yeah, it's totally different than the first one we had.
Yeah. It's getting late. We're getting tired. So, is the recording working?
Yeah, I guess it's... Do you want to stop it here? At least say something nice. I want to end it.
No, it's better to continue. I mean...
So, the things that I was interested to know. How was the school? How was the elementary school? What would you do? I mean... Did you go to the streets to play with friends at the streets? I don't know, football or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, primary school is just primary school. We just go there, play with our friends. Usually after school, we have a football field next to the primary school. So we all play football there. Or in the evening, we play hide and seek, those kind of things.
And then after that, how was college?
So for us, after primary school, we go to high school. Mm-hmm. So when you're 12, you go to high school. High school was good the first year. It was nice meeting a lot of new people. But then I was more interested in not going to school, playing video games at home, smoking cigarettes outside of school, and just be really annoying. Maybe rebellious in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would skip school and then there was this youth center. We run to there and then smoke cigarettes there. I had a paper round back then, so I had some money so I could buy cigarettes. And then we would just share cigarettes. We'd all bring deodorant, chewing gum, and then make sure nobody could smell. But always, of course, they knew we were smoking. And yeah, that's what we did. And usually after school as well, we would always meet at the pool, and we would go to the back of the pool, back of the building. And then we'd meet there with a lot of friends and smoke cigarettes and just sit there. Yeah, we have this thing in Netherlands where, you just hang. We don't really have a translation for it, but yeah, it just means that young kids are always hanging around. So they hang around at the bench at the church, at the pool, or somewhere else. So we just sit there and smoke and just listen to Bob Marley. Yeah. Yeah. That was my school. And then in high school, the second year, it became worse because I didn't want to go to school at all. I didn't really like going to school.
What did they teach you in the school?
What they taught us. So we have Dutch language, English language. We have geography, history. We have religious things, but more learning about the world. History, I said, and math and physical education.
Practically the same as ours.
Yeah, I would think so.
But you didn't have to stay in lines when you wanted to go to...
No, we didn't. We're not like Belgium. No. No, we would just come whenever we wanted to, pretty much. Yeah, it's not too strict. Although they were very strict on people being late. So time at home is actually really important. So if you're 1 minute late, you are late. And it's such a bad thing. So if you would come 1 minute late in the class, you would have to go to the... I don't know what they call it. Just like some guy sitting there. You go to him and then... He'll ask you like, oh, why are you late? Why are you late 1 minute? And then you tell them, oh, I had some issues with my bicycle or something. Then you would get a note. And then with that note, the next morning, you would have to come in early. I think it was about at 8 you had to come in. So normally you would start at 9 or 8:30, but you would have to come in at 8.
1 hour.
Yeah, you would have to come in at that time and then give them the note to prove that you... came early that next day. So yeah, but I had an issue with that, so I was always late, always like 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
Had a lot of those papers.
So what happens then is that they will give you a warning, and then if it happens again a couple times, they will send you to the police. So I had to go to the police, and then
I was late.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I had to go to the police, and then you have to say, yeah, I've been late so many times. And then they will give you a punishment. So you get community service. So I had community service because I was late 5 minutes, 10 minutes every day.
You had community service because you were late to get to the school?
Yeah. Yeah.
So harsh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's horrible. No. But yeah, so my community service was to help clean up this festival that we had. And it was pretty okay because all these people are cool people, you know. And then the people that work there that will guide you, they are really nice and everything. So yeah, they just let you sit, and then you help clean a bit, and then they let you go the next day.
What was the hard part during your childhood?
The hard part, probably my family mostly. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened within my family, a lot of drug abuse and abuse as well. So that didn't make it easier for me in high school. Yeah.
And then college happened.
Yeah. So for us, we have to go to school until we're 18. So I was 16 when I finished my high school. So we have... In that high school that where I was, you have three levels. So you have like the okay-ish level, which I was doing. Then you have like better than okay and the best one. So I was on the okay-ish. And so after 4 years, you finish there. And then you're only 16, so you still have to do 2 years. So when you're 16, you pick your college, and then you specialize further in what you want to do. So that's when I started to do software and game development for... Yeah, it was supposed to be 3 years, but then...
Is that something that people suddenly start?
No, I was always interested in programming. I mean, I was always really into video games. You know, played a lot of World of Warcraft and a lot of Command and Conquer. and all these things. And I was always playing it online. So I was always on TeamSpeak and Ventrilo talking to other people and stuff. So I wanted to do something with that. So yeah, that's why I chose game development. Yeah, it's part of that.
How does it work? I mean, do you have to do some entrance exam?
No. No, so college is, because you were on the OKish level, right? It's not that hard to get in. So that means you do 4 years and then you have a high school exam, and then based on that, you can pick your next college. Yeah.
So there's an exam.
There's an exam, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I passed barely.
So you choose software development, game development?
Software and game development, yeah.
What was the vision? What did you want to do? I mean, did you have any vision that, okay, I want to be a game developer and create, yeah, work on that, something like World of Warcraft or Half-Life?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. That was the plan. You know, when I, that's definitely something I wanted to do, like be able to somehow write some code and then see that reflect into the video game itself. And yeah, then I joined that course, and then we were building Yahtzee and some card games and Snake, and it wasn't really, you know, what I wanted to do.
3D, yeah. First person shooter.
Yeah, we were, what else? We were using Lua to make some games as well. And I don't know, I wanted to work on 3D games like Unreal Engine, right? Or Unity or whatever. But that wasn't really the case back then.
So what was the rush? Why were you so impatient? You have to start from somewhere?
The issue at those colleges is that the programming languages that they use is very old. For example, we were learning some web development as well. And they were teaching us how to use Dreamweaver, and they were teaching us HTML1. So HTML1.
Do we have HTML1?
Yeah. I mean, you have capitalized tags like capital H1, or you use capital B in between tags to have bold text, you know, those kind of things. So it was very outdated. And also the teachers there, they're very old, you know, they don't really keep up with what's happening in programming.
What year we're talking about?
We're talking about 2009. Yeah, 2009, 2010. Yeah, so all the students that were there, we knew programming. We knew how to use C# and all that stuff. They were teaching us Visual Basic for applications. So it wasn't using its own IDE like Visual Studio.net. It was using Excel, and then you would go into the menu for scripts, Visual Basic for applications. You would go in there, and then in there you would write your Yahtzee or something. So it was very, very bad. So yeah. And then, yeah, some stuff happened in my family as well. So then I was not too motivated because of that, and in combination with, you know, all this stuff being outdated. So yeah, and then after 2 years, I thought, okay, I'll just quit and get a job, make some money.
To get your degree, you had to attend two more years, right?
One more year, yeah.
One more year.
Yeah, but I was so done at that point, you know. Yeah, so that's when I quit. And then I think it was just before the summer holidays. And then my parents said, okay, if you want to quit, that's fine, but you're definitely not going to be at home the entire day, so you better get a job. And I was okay with that. I mean, so I signed up on this just through a website.
So I mean, they talked to you that we don't want you to be at home during the,
and yeah, I think they don't want you to be lazy, right, and not do anything. I think it's a good thing. I mean, I would want my children to be independent and do stuff, you know, and not sit at home, play video games. So I can understand them, because I was playing video games a lot, you know. It wasn't like, okay, after, you know, work I played 2 hours. No, it was like all-nighters, everything, because I loved it, you know. So yeah, I mean, it was amazing for me to be able to, I couldn't believe like how you can create such a big world and then all these people are walking around everything. I was just fascinated by it. So I really liked it. But yeah, so I thought it was a good thing that they said, okay, you go get a job somewhere. And then I signed up on this website, for some warehouse job in my hometown.
What warehouse?
It's a warehouse for a store. So you just...
I mean, so you had this experience in programming. Why didn't you...
Because I didn't have a degree. I didn't have a degree, and I think I was a bit too green at that point to actually go to companies and say, hey, I want to be a programmer. I think I was still a bit young. I was 18. So also I thought, you know, I was a bit of a nerd. So I thought, okay, if I'm going to always be in IT, I don't want to be one of those weirdos, you know, that cannot talk to anyone. No, but so I thought it would be good for me to get a job and work with other people to avoid something like this. So that's when I, I signed up online, for that warehouse, and I thought, oh, they won't contact me. But in my message, I wrote, I'm available. How long you want me? Whatever. So of course they call me right away, and I started the next Monday. I guess, started working there for maybe €2 an hour or something like that. Was it €2 or €4? Yeah.
Minimum wage, or is this?
Yeah. So it's minimum wage for a underage person for your age. So in Netherlands, it's by age. So if you are 18, you make this amount of money. If you're 19, you make this amount of money up until you're 27. And then after that, it stops. So unless your boss is nice, then you can make some more money. So yeah, I started working there, and the work was quite easy because it was, we would just get in boxes from trucks, and then you would put labels on the boxes, and we would get orders from the web shop, and you would prepare these orders and pack them for the people.
It seemed that you really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really loved it. No, but that's the thing. I mean, of all the jobs that I had, I have many different jobs over the years. I enjoyed most of them, yeah. Because it's all different, you know. And the nice thing about this job was that you are really tired at the end of the day. Like, you see what you have done. And it's not just labeling stuff. It's also moving stuff, helping build like new racks in the warehouse, or going to customers' houses and delivering stuff. Or going on the truck, going to the other side of Netherlands and delivering the goods. So there was a lot of stuff involved, and it was nice. And the good thing was that they would allow you to work as long as you wanted. So for me, that just, you know, I did a simple calculation in my mind. Okay, if I work 12 hours a day, I get 12 times €3. It's a lot of money, you know, for a young guy. And if I then work 6 days or 7 days in a week, that's even more. So I started working about 6 days in a week. And then, there were days where I, went to the warehouse at 3 a.m. and then we would go on a truck, go to the other side of Netherlands, and then come back, maybe like 2 p.m. And then I would work until 10 p.m. just to, make those hours and get more money.
How old were your coworkers?
All different. There were guys my age. There were people really old.
And you had to communicate with them on a daily basis.
Yeah. So usually you have your own section in the warehouse. So you work with those people mainly, but we had lunch. So you interact with everyone and you drive forklift. So you drive with the other guys and you get to deal with the truck drivers. And one of my favorite things to do was, we would get these sea containers full of product. They were filled to the end, you know. So we would get them in the morning and then we would have 3 hours to empty them. So the store I was working for, they would sell like strollers for babies and beds and all things that you need for a baby. So yeah, this container would come from China. You would open it and it's a long truck. It's a sea container full of small boxes. And then, okay, you have 3 hours and then you would just empty it. And it was a workout, definitely. before that, they were hiring like an external team to do it. These guys were on speed emptying this thing. It's a drug. It's just so you can work faster to empty it. But then they got rid of these guys. Yeah. But that was my favorite thing to do because it was such a quick workout and you could drive forklift. So you would load all the boxes on the pallet and then drive the forklift, deliver it to the other guy and then run back and continue. Yeah. So that was good. It was good. It taught me a lot of discipline because my issue in high school was I was always late and in college, same thing. But then the boss that was working there, he was a really like, you know, these guys from back in the day, they're really rough and disciplined, you know. Yes. So he was like that. So every morning, if I was late for 1 minute, he would already
call
me.
Give you a paper.
No. Yeah. He would call me and yell at me like, yo, where the fuck are you? You know, stuff like that. So while I hated it back then, but now I am really thankful for it because he did teach me to be on time and just be there, you know. And he would always say like, okay, because we would always drink a lot as well. So he would say like, okay, whatever, you can drink as much as you want, but if you're a man in the evening, you're going to be a man in the morning as well. So yeah, it was a really good guy. Yeah.
So you must have the potential because for a year I was in the military and they did force me all that kind of stuff and they yelled at me. Nothing changed here.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's by person. I don't know. Yeah.
So, and at night you go home, right?
Yeah,
at
night. Because I usually stay late. So, they would give us dinner at the warehouse.
You were really enjoying it.
Yeah, it was.
That's
nice.
Why I asked about how old were your coworkers, because it seemed that you were practically living there.
Yeah, but I mean, most of the coworkers, they wouldn't work this long. There were some other guys my age; they would also work this long. So we would always be there, always the same, you know, group of young guys working there. But yeah.
Hmm.
But I would have dinner there, and then I would come home. Like, depends until what time I was working. We'll go home, shower, go to bed, wake up and go back to work. Yeah.
And you told me you sleep in nights for 3-4 hours?
Sometimes. I mean,
5 hours?
If I would have to work until 10, then I have to go home. So I still have to go home. Then I have to shower. Then it's maybe 11 before I go to bed. And then at 3 in the morning, I had to be back at the warehouse to go on the truck to go to the other side of Netherlands. Yeah.
Okay. 3 years passed.
Yeah.
Everything's good. You have your friends. You make a name over there.
Yeah.
They know you.
Yeah.
So why would you leave that?
Because I thought I had more in me and I was still interested in programming as well. Because the thing is, you know, you work at a warehouse and it's very simple. You know, it's not mentally challenging at all. So it's easy. It's very comfortable because it's not hard, you know, it's very easy. You get your money. If you need a bit more money next month, you can work a bit more
hours.
The task
you have to do is obvious. And you also see the results. It's so tangible.
Exactly. Yeah, you can just put in your earplugs and work and then go home. That's it. So yeah, because of that, it's very comfortable and very easy. But yeah, I wanted to do something more, you know. I thought, you know, I can work here for 3 years, but I don't want to end up like some of the people that have been here for 20 years, right? I don't want to be that guy that has been standing in this dark warehouse and has been labeling the same thing every day. You know, there must be something more.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know what. So there was another guy that worked with me. He was, I think, a bit older than me. And he went to Australia. And so we were always talking about it. Like, he was like, oh, it was like the best time of my life, blah, blah, blah. And then, I think after a couple months, I was like, okay, and that sounds good, you know. And then I told one of my best friends and I said, let's go to Australia, you know, that would be amazing. Because he was also stuck, you know, in his life. He wanted something more. And then he was like, yeah, we should do that. So we went to this event where they explain, you know, what you can do in Australia. It's like an organization. They will help you. So you fly with them to Australia. And then in Australia, they have a hostel And mm-hmm. it's kind of like a safe haven, because you know these guys, they're going to help you. So you're not alone at the other side. So we went there, and then they showed us all the pictures. They explained us how it is and stuff, and how they help you. And yeah, that was all good. So then we were like, okay, we're definitely going. So then we were saving up the money. So we saved a lot of money. And then my friend, he built, like he had some reasons that he had to stay at home. And then, I was like, okay, I mean, that sucks, but in a way it's good as well, because it's, I think, better for my own growth to be there alone than to always be with my friend, because then you'll just stay in that comfortable zone with them. Whereas if you go alone, you have no one else to fall back onto. Mm-hmm. So you have to like figure out how to do stuff, how to get your money, and how mm-hmm. to make sure you're okay and stuff like that.
What were you looking for in Australia? Is there anything specific, or you just wanted to make a change?
Definitely make a change, but also it's very common in Europe to have this gap year. So usually what people do is they study university, and then they go somewhere for 1 year. Could be South America, Asia, New Zealand, or Australia. So it's a gap year to kind of figure out what you want to do in university. So for me, that wasn't the case, because I didn't want to go to university. I didn't like school or anything. So for me, it was more like, okay, I need to figure out what I want to do, you know, because I studied software and game development, but then I dropped out. So that, you know, do I still want to do that? Or should I go back to my warehouse job? Or what do I want to do in my life? So that year was kind of to try and figure out what I wanted to do. But I don't think I still know up to this day, you know. So, I mean, maybe there's some more clarity now, because now I have like a stable job and everything, and I kind of enjoy it. So, yeah, but it's still like a process to figure out. Yeah. So, yeah. But then, when I came in Australia, I heard about this couch surfing thing. And I thought, okay, that would be perfect. So before I flew to Australia, I flew to Korea. Because, okay, backtracking quite a lot. Yeah. So before I went to Australia, I went to Dublin a couple times. So
these are all new to me.
Yeah, yeah. So because back then, Ryanair, they started becoming very popular in Europe. They just started, or something like that. So they were offering really cheap flights. So you could fly to Dublin, London for like 10 euros. So that was, it's very cheap.
It's airline, huh?
Ryanair. Yeah, it's an airline, Irish airline. So yeah, 9 euros it was. Yeah, 9 euros you could fly from my city, close to where I lived, to Dublin. So we went there a couple times, me and my friends, and I went there once for a concert. It was a Mumford & Sons concert. Yeah. So it was a Mumford & Sons concert, and then we were posting on this website of the concert page, and we were like, hey, me and my friend, we were young, you know, so we were like posting like, hey, we're Dutch guys, you know, if anyone wants to chill with us, because we always wanted to meet foreigners and other people. Yeah, we posted there, and then what happened? Yeah, so a Dutch girl replied to us. So we're like, oh, okay. But anyway, it's nice, you know. So a Dutch girl replied to us, and she said, oh, hey, I'm in Dublin. I'm studying here, and me and my friend are going to this Mumford & Sons concert. So we were like, okay, I mean, sure, let's go. So we went there, and then her friend was a Korean girl, right? So she was working or studying there. I cannot remember. So anyway, we met with them in some bar, and then we had some drinks, watched some football. Went to the concert, everything. And then after that, we went back to Dublin a couple times because the flights were so cheap. So we went to the, west of Ireland. We went to like, Galway and, Connemara, I think, and the Cliffs of Moher. Yeah. It's all very nice places. It's all the west coast of Ireland. It's very nice. So we met up with them a couple of times. And then once the Korean girl had a birthday in Dublin, and then I flew over with my brother just to go to the party. So anyway, going back to going to Australia. So I went to Korea first because I had to stop somewhere on the way. So I thought, okay, because the girl was back in South Korea. So I thought, hey, I'll just come visit you. You can show me Korea. And then I'll stay there for a couple of days and then I'll go to Australia after this. So the first few days when I was in Korea, I was there for 4 days. First few days, I couldn't hang out with her. She was busy with work or something. So I figured out the couchsurfing thing and I saw they were having a meetup. So they had a meetup somewhere in a bar as well. And what was very naive of me was to think that in Korea, people would speak English. So it's not like that. So I just imagine a very, like, you haven't been abroad that much, right? And then you suddenly get thrown into Korea. So everything around you is not in English. It's all in Korean. So that was me. I was standing there and trying to find my hostel, couldn't find it. And I didn't know what to do. So I just asked for help and anything. But anyway, we had this couchsurfing thing and there was a address in Korean. So I just stopped the taxi and I show him the address.
You couldn't even read the address.
No, it wasn't Korean. So there was only the Korean address and a number as well. So I showed him the address and then he said, okay. And I was like, okay. So I went into the taxi with him. Yeah. It took quite long to get there though. So I'm not sure if he knew where he was going and eventually he asked for the number. So I think he called them. And then he knew and he dropped me off there and it was in Itaewon. Itaewon is like the party area there. So anyway, we went there and I arrived and, then I met a lot of really cool people. There were like 50 other couch surfers and, I was telling them like, yo, it's my first time abroad, you know, like, yeah. What should I expect? And they were really nice. Like they were like, oh, you'll be fine. You know, you will meet a lot of cool people and everything. And then I met a couple of people on this meetup and, yeah, partied with them for a couple of days and ate a lot of food. And
so these are couch surfers.
Couch surfers. Yeah. So they, besides couch surfing, they also have events that they do. So they have like, meet up for drinks.
These events are for people who do couchsurfing?
For anyone, really. You can just sign up on couchsurfing and then find the events.
Okay.
Then you can meet all these mm-hmm. new people. So I met this one guy and he said he had like thousands of couchsurfers already. He literally had a really big house with 5 rooms and he would just have couchsurfers every time. So yeah.
So he invited people, the people came and...
Yeah, there were so many people. Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah, and then, I met another, lady through couchsurfing. She, was a physics teacher in a university there. And, she said, okay, I will show you around. Don't worry about anything.
Korean. She was Korean.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was, we were supposed to meet the night after the couchsurfing night. And that couchsurfing night, you know, we met some people. We had a big party. I was very hungover. So, next day, I was in my hostel and I was quite hungover. So I slept quite late and, she knew where I was staying. So she has been waiting for a couple of hours and I was texting. I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so hungover. Like, let's cancel it. And then, she said, no, it's okay. I know how it is for you, for foreigners in Korea. Don't worry. We can go later. And then she just waited for me and then, I was like, okay, now I have to go, you know? So, I had a shower and then, dressed up and then she took me, to some places in Seoul. I wouldn't know the name now. But yeah, she took me all around to some places.
What was the city? Do you know the?
In Seoul, the capital. Yeah. So she took me to a lot of places there and she prepared some homemade sushi as well. It was really nice. And, yeah, that was my couchsurfing adventure there. And yeah, so leading that back to the couchsurfing in Australia. So that's when I thought, okay, couchsurfing is such a good thing. You know, you can meet so many cool people. Everyone's really nice. So I thought, okay, why not try in Australia as well?
What was the initial plan?
In Australia?
Yes.
To just go in a hostel for a couple, maybe for a week And then from there, we'll see. Maybe get a job and then work, or I don't know. We'll mm-hmm. see. Didn't really have a plan. But then I found a couchsurfing place. And this couchsurfing host, he invited me to his place. And he said, oh, I have a house on the beach in Cronulla in Sydney. And I was like, wow, that's amazing, you know? So I said, yeah, sure. So I was going to stay there for 8 days. That was my time. That's when I thought, okay, after this time, I want to move and continue whatever. So yeah, I arrived in Sydney and, then went to that guy's place, and he had another couple of couchers for staying there. And the guy was obviously super rich because it's like a villa on the beach, right? And his house, it was just so nice. His car was nice. He
told me he was a pilot, I guess.
Yeah, he was a pilot. And he signed us up for the gym. Like, yeah. So
let's just clarify. So
yeah,
you have nothing. It's just you and your backpack.
Yeah.
And you get to Australia, and someone, a pilot, says, okay, I have this big house.
Yeah.
And couch surfers can come here and then stay here.
Yeah.
And then you went there. He signed you up into gym.
Yeah.
A good place, good people.
Yeah. Yeah. So the story will get better. Don't worry. So he signed us up for the gym. So we would all in the morning go to the gym. And at one point it became a bit weird. Yeah, so, you know, I'm quite skeptical of people, especially, I think you can also imagine that if somebody is really nice to you, then in most people, it will trigger something like, okay, you know, maybe there's some hidden motive, you know?
Mm.
So I always had this in the back of my mind. So the place, you have to imagine, we all had our own rooms. We could lock the door, whatever. So that's also what I did, right? I locked the door and at night just to make sure, you know, you never know, right? You cannot immediately trust a person, how nice they are, how good their references are. There was this English guy staying with me, and we were always talking about it. Like, it's a bit weird, you know, because eventually the guy, he would go on flights from Sydney to LA. And then he would say, hey guys, you know, I'll be away for 2 weeks, but don't worry about it. I left something for you in the kitchen. And they were like, oh, okay. So we would wait until he leaves. And then we would go into the kitchen and we would open the cupboard, and then there would be an envelope. And he would say like, oh, just enjoy your weekend, something like that. So he'd open the envelope, and it was a lot of money in there, like $500 Australian. So we were like, what the fuck, you know? So eventually we were always talking, we were always drinking and talking at the beach, and we were like,
the free money?
We were like, this is weird, you know. But obviously our first reaction to it was texting the guy and be like, yo, we cannot take it, you know, just don't give us money, we don't want the money and everything. But he kept insisting, and we were like, you know, okay, then we can do groceries at least, so he can also use it. But then we were always discussing it. We were always like, it's so weird, you know, why he's a single guy and he's giving us free money, he's signing us up for the gym. And there was another thing. He would prefer not to have girls in his house. And the reason was that,
just has all the red flags.
yeah, exactly. So at that point, we were already very skeptical of the guy. And the thing is, you are a backpacker, you know, and a backpacker usually doesn't have money. So for you, it's easier to stay at this place than to struggle and find a hostel somewhere. So this was definitely taken into consideration. But also, we knew that we were there with other people. Like, we weren't staying alone with him, which was a good thing. So at one point he came back from Los Angeles, and then we would be out for the day. He would come back and then he would say, hey guys, I left something in your rooms and whatever. And then in the room, he would have bought all these clothes and everything, Like, you would say, oh, don't worry about it. It's so cheap in LA. And you're like, yo, this is so weird. Like, it's, why? Why would he do that? And then, So at one point, the English guy moved out. So I started thinking, oh my God, you know, I don't want to be alone here. And then luckily he found another guy to come into the house, another couch surfer. And, this was a Chilean guy. His name was Vladimir. I don't know why a Chilean mom would call their child Vladimir. But anyway, the guy was a really nice guy. I really like him. And we became good friends as well. We would go for snorkeling and everything. But, so the first day he came, I was having dinner with the pilot. So the guy even had a wine cellar in the back of his house. So at night, you can imagine there was a nice table and then he would have really nice wine, nice food, everything. So that night when the Chilean guy came, we were having dinner and then he came and then he introduced whatever. And at one point I had to leave because I was going to go to Sydney, to the city, and have a birthday party for my friend's friend. So we went to Sydney. And then my friend, she was having issues with her boyfriend, whatever. So I said, okay, let me just bring you home because she was very emotional and everything. So we went on the train. She went home on her station. And then I went to my station. And then I was walking home. And I came home. And it was like 2 a.m. or something. And then all of a sudden the pilot came down. And he was not wearing a shirt. And what was weird is that normally he would be dressed, you know, appropriately or whatever, but he wasn't wearing a shirt. So I was like, okay, this is super weird. You know, I don't want to be in this situation where something is going to happen. And then he was like, oh, what's up? And I was like, oh, I just, dropped Elizabeth home because she had some issues. So I'm just going to go, maybe smoke and then, go to bed. And he was like, oh, okay. And then I was like, oh, so what are you? What are you up to?
Yeah. What's going on there?
Yeah, exactly. And then...
Where's Vladimir?
Yeah. So, so he said, oh, I was just upstairs, you know, just some lame excuse. And then I didn't think much of it. You know, I was just a bit like weirded out that he was there without a shirt. But I went to bed, you know, locked my door, everything, and that's it. Yeah. And then a couple of days passed and then he had to go for a flight again. And same routine, he left some money, he left this, whatever. Anyway, Vladimir, he's usually a very talkative guy. You know, South Americans, they have a lot of energy. They're really social people. And this time he seemed like a bit off. And I was like questioning it. And he said, maybe we should like take one of the vodka bottles and then we can talk about it.
It's getting scary.
Yeah, so... I was like, oh, okay, man, like, sure, if you want to talk, then let's go. Let's take one of the bottles and go and talk about it. And then we drank the bottle of vodka quite fast and we were really drunk. Then he was like, I think something happened. So apparently that night, when I left from the dinner, they were still drinking and having dinner and talking about Chile and everything. And then eventually Vladimir said, no, I'm too drunk. I think I want to go to bed. And the pilot was like, yeah, sure. So Vladimir went up to his room, but he was so drunk that he left the door open. And then he said to me that at one point he woke up and then the pilot was standing next to him without a shirt on. At that point, I came into the house and then he quickly went down and he was like, oh, what's up? So after that day, I said to the guy, okay, like this like 100,000% confirms everything that we thought, you know. So immediately I tried to find the next place where I could go to. And so I went online to this website called Help Exchange, found the farm, and I think a couple of days later I left and didn't go back. Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh. Yeah, it was always...
You have this beautiful villa behind the beach, the with beautiful the free villa, food and a lot of money, and the creepy guy, okay. And you went to a farm.
Yeah, I went to a farm. Yeah. Yeah, it was very weird. I'm just happy nothing happened.
Yeah. An interesting,
it's very interesting
turn of events.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was very surreal. I mean, it kind of gave you the experience of living like a life where you don't have to worry about money. But I mean, you see that it's not the life that, I mean, for me personally, I don't want to live like that, because the conversations that they were having with their friends, it was just, oh, hey, look at this restaurant I'm eating at. Oh, hey, look at this new thing I bought. Look at this, what I bought. Look at this amount of money.
You mean the pilot, right?
Yeah, the pilot and his friends. Like, it's very shallow. It's not interesting. So I'm kind of happy that I got to experience that and know now that, you know, money is not everything. It doesn't buy you a genuine, nice life. And it seems that he also has some issues mentally still. So, yeah, so money doesn't buy happiness. Yeah.
So then after that farm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that you enjoyed the farm very much.
I loved it.
Because of all the pictures that I see you in the hugging the pigs.
Yeah, so I went to a farm in a place called Baralaba. It's in Queensland, close to Rockhampton. And I signed up there. It was a organic free-range pig farm. And they also had goats and cows and they had chicken and stuff like that. Just normal farm. But what I liked, it's organic free range. So it means that it's not industrial farming. And the reviews that they had, because I used Help Exchange, so you can leave references. So all the references of all the people were so good. So I tried to go there and they accepted me. And I was supposed to go there for a month. And I flew there. Then I got picked up by the farmer's son from the airport. And then the next day, right away, I had to start at 6 in the morning. Yeah. Which was quite intense after not working for 3 months, living on the beach and just tanning and reading books. I went there and next morning I started. And basically what we had to do is feed all the stock. You feed all the livestock. So feed the pigs, feed the cows, feed the goat. So for the pigs, we would have this mixture of grain and whatever. And for the goats, we would cut down lucina trees. So we would get machetes and then we would drive, you know, farms in Australia are huge. So we would drive like for 20 minutes and then we find the trees. We cut them with the machetes, put them in the back of the utility car, and then bring them back and feed them to the goats. And then they're so happy. And
thanks, Aaron.
Yeah, if they only could talk.
No. Yeah.
Yeah, so, what I just really liked is that all the food that we had came from that farm. So you would never buy food. We have all the meat, we have all the vegetables, we had a vegetable garden. Even the kombucha, right, that I'm making now, the farmer's lady inspired me to make that, because she was always making this and she would make some other drinks as well. So how the roles were is that the farmer, the guy, he was always out in the field, you know, working. And then the farmer's lady, she sometimes helped, but mostly she was cooking lunch for us. So a day for me was you wake up at 6 in the morning, you feed all the pigs, and then you maybe fix a fence somewhere. And then we have smoko, so smoke break. And then it's not a smoke break, but it's just a 10-minute break. We have a breakfast, so we have some toast.
And your plants, it seemed very condensed and everything's had to happen very...
No, we all have cars. So we all driving all over the farm and then we bring the car back. We know what time is smoko, so we would come back and then the farmer's lady, she prepared bread, which is her own bread, her own jam, her own drinks.
Everything
is her own meat on top of the bread. So it was very nice. It was, if you could have that for the rest of your life, then that would be so nice. That was just breakfast. And then we go back into the field, just check on the pigs because we need to make sure they're okay, you know, if they're in pain or something. And of course, in Australia, it's very hot. So we need to make sure they have a mud pool. We need to make sure they have enough water.
Mud pool? They go and...
Yeah, they
roll
love it.
Over?
Yeah, they love it. They will go to the mud pool and then they will just throw themselves on the side. Yeah. And then they just move around in there.
And they can be huge. I didn't know that they can be so big.
Yeah. We had a couple male pigs. And they were, I think, a couple of years old. Or maybe quite old. Maybe like 5 years old. And they were huge. They stand up to maybe maybe almost our shoulders. Like they're really huge.
How many people you were?
So we had... Usually there were a couple of backpackers. So there was me and then there were... when I started, we had two other girls. One was from Hong Kong. One was from Taiwan. And then we had a French girl and a German guy. We were all there together. And then the German guy left and the French girl left. And then we had an English couple.
Ooh, what a diversity.
Yeah. And then I think they eventually left as well. And then we had some of the farmer's family came. The sons would work there. Their friends would work there.
And it's interesting that I can feel that when you were there, you were part of a family.
Yeah, for sure. That was a really nice part because they would definitely see you as a son. Like they would yell at you like a son as well if you did something wrong. So that was nice. But, having dinners with them and all these things, it just made it very much a family thing. So I really liked it because of this. So that's why I ended up staying like 4 months, I think. Yeah.
4 months.
Yeah. And a lot of backpackers came and went. And so the thing why I did this as well is because we can stay for 1 year in Australia. But if we want to stay 2 years, we can do that. But we have to unlock it. So we have to work in a farm for 3 months in remote Australia somewhere. So this would help me unlock those 3 months as well.
Well, actually, my question wasn't that why 4 months. My question was that why not longer? Because it seems that you're enjoying it. Why you didn't spend more time there?
Yeah. I mean, eventually everything loses its touch as well. I mean, you want something more and also, you know, your time is limited in Australia. So, yeah, I don't know.
So after 4 months,
yeah, after you decided 4 months, to go to... I actually met a girl on the farm. She was a Dutch girl and we got together and she stayed there for 1 month, I think. And then she went to New Zealand.
Ah, so here comes the New Zealand.
No. This is just, yeah. Okay. So she went to New Zealand and I said, okay, I'll come with you to New Zealand. I've been here for 4 months. I mean, I want to go somewhere else. And she was okay with that. So we went to New Zealand for 1 month, for like a holiday. And, we went there. We started in Christchurch. No, I think we started in Auckland. So we joined this bus tour. So you're on this tour for 1 month with the same people. So, but you go to all of the places in New Zealand. We went on this bus tour and then met all the people from the start. And then all the people were really cool. So we became one big family. Wow. And every city we stopped, we had so much fun. We drink a lot. Dance a lot. We just have so much fun. We spent 1 month in New Zealand and then my girlfriend at the time, she wanted to go to Perth, but I wanted to go back to Sydney.
Go to where?
Perth. It's a city in the west side of Australia. I wanted to go to Sydney, because I wanted to meet with my friend and everything. So, I went back to Sydney. She went to Perth. And I got a job as a data entry operator. So I was looking for a job for a while, but I could not really get anything. And then I thought, I know how to program, so I can type quite fast and all this stuff. So I went for the interview there and then, my typing was really fast, they said. So they would love to have me on. So I joined that company and the company basically, it's pretty simple work. So we would get the handwritten traffic fines from the police in New South Wales, the state, and we would have to type them into a database. And that's it. That's what you have to do the entire day. So, but the pay was so good. Like the pay was, I think it was about 20 Australian dollar an hour, which is a lot, you know, for a backpacker. It's good money. So, I would go there 7 a.m. every morning and then, work until I believe it was 3 or 4. And I would just process fines the entire day.
Type.
And eventually you reach a point where you don't even have to, like be conscious that you're looking at the fine, you know.
You can guess what's going to be in the fine.
pretty much. You recognize the codes, for example. So say a fine for going through a red light is a code like A30.
Mm-hmm.
Then next time you get it, you will know, okay, that's going through a red light. So you can automatically type it. Yeah, so that's what we did. And I think I worked there for 3 months as well. Yeah, I think 3 months. And then that company lost the contract for the traffic fines because there was another company that could automate all this. So they would have a scanner. It was quite sad because that company, that they had been doing it for 20 plus years. So a lot of people that were working there, they were there for 20 years. That was their job, you know, that was their life for the last 20 years. And then all of a sudden, this new startup comes out and they're like, oh, we can just scan it. And yeah, you don't need people anymore. So they took over the contract. And then that new company, they got all the existing people through a interview, like a group interview, because they said, okay, we don't want you to lose your job. So you can come work for us. And so I went for the interview as well, but I kind of knew that I didn't want to go there. But anyway, they offered the job to, I think, everyone from the old company. So that was good. But I declined because I wanted to go to the next place. I mean, I had been in Sydney mm-hmm. for 3 months now. So my next place was Darwin in the north of Australia. Yeah, upper north. So...
why Darwin?
I wanted to have something completely different. And Darwin is completely different from Sydney, Melbourne, Perth. Those places are very much city, but Darwin is like very much Asia. Yeah, Darwin is a very... it's a very small town. In the north, it's very hot. It's very humid. I think in wet season, people don't really live there and work there. I mean, people do, but they get paid a lot of money to be there. It's just too hot. It's... you know, in Malaysia, it's hot, but it's super hot there. So it's not enjoyable. But anyway, I thought, you know, I thought Darwin is another big city. So I thought, okay, I'll just go there and then work there, find a job, whatever. But so did a couple hundred of other backpackers. And it's not a big place. It's a very small city. And yeah, if there's a lot of competition, it doesn't really work. You know, it's hard to get a job. And, yeah, so after 1 week, I thought, shit, you know, like, I cannot work here because it's too hot and there's no jobs.
Too much competition.
Yeah, too much competition. And also, I'm running out of money, so I need a job soon.
It's a very strange feeling that I'm running out of money.
Yeah.
What do you mean I'm running out of money?
I mean...
because we say that, but we don't mean it, I guess.
No, you mean it. When you're a backpacker in Australia, you mean it. You don't have any money. You can maybe call your parents and ask, hey, I'm homeless. Yeah. But I'm not sure if in my case, I could do that. So no, backpackers in Australia, we go there with a bit of money. But, you know, some of us, we only go there with maybe $1,000 Australian, which is not enough. That is maybe enough for a week or 2 weeks, but to sustain yourself every day, that's definitely not enough. So yeah, I really ran out of money. So I had, I think, maybe $800 Australian left. And then the farm I was working at, they had a daughter, and the daughter lived in Perth. So I was really close to the farmers and everything. So I texted the daughter. I said, yo, is it, can I come to Perth and stay at your place for a couple of days, you know, just so I can figure out my own way. And she said, yeah, of course, you can always come. So I booked my flight, and the flight was expensive. It was like, I think, $300 Australian. So I flew from Darwin to Perth, and then I arrived there, and then I was trying to get a job as well, which was also impossible. Like in Perth, there are also a lot of backpackers and also very little jobs. And then I saw this bus in Perth, in the city center, and they were having this ad for a festival or for an event. And this event was Sexpo. So Sexpo was on for like 3-4 days. And I thought, surely on events they need people. So I emailed them. I used my online skills, just like I did for the warehouse. I messaged them and I said, yo, I'm in Perth. I'm looking for a job. I can work as long as you want, whatever. And they said, oh yeah, we definitely need some people for merchandising and whatever. So I went there the next day, picked up my Sexpo shirt and key tag and everything.
I guess you need to explain a little to me about what exactly is this festival that we're talking about.
Yeah, so Sexpo is like a convention where you can find strippers, you can find manufacturers of dildos, you can find manufacturers of condoms. Sexpo, yeah. Sex Expo, yeah. So... yeah, I went there and I met all these crazy people there that all really liked to party. And
you were selling merchandise. What kind of merchandise?
I was selling merchandise. I was selling the Sexpo team shirts, and I would sell like upgrades. Like, you would have a silver card, and then that card would give you access to a strip club inside the expo. It's just a lot of very sexually themed things. There was even a guy, he's called Picasso, and he paints portraits with his I went there for a couple of days.
Such a nice festival.
It was really fun.
So many strange things to see.
Yeah, it's been an eye-opener. Yeah, they even had classes, workshops where you could go bring your partner, and then they would explain you how to have sex in a specific way. Wow. And
it's such a busy center that you have to sell in the merchandise, huh?
I was selling merchandise, and then they rotate you as well. So at one point I was working at the strip club. So I was behind the cashier.
Your turn, go.
Just putting this on record for my parents. Yeah, so I was in the cashier, and I would need to help the strippers because they would give the people that came into the expo, they would give them coupons. So instead of giving money to the strippers, they would give them coupons. Oh. So, and then the strippers would come to me, and then I would exchange the coupons for real money.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a prestigious job.
Yeah. No, but it was really nice because they're so chill. Like, they're really chill people, nice and just normal as well. They just know how to make money because there was a lot of money going on in there.
Oh.
So yeah, that was nice. And then we had an after party in some kind of strip club in Perth as well. And yeah.
For four days.
For 4 days I did that. And then after 4 days, what happened? I felt bad for staying at the daughter's place.
I thought you felt bad for the jobs that you were.
No, not at all. I really enjoyed it. So I felt bad for staying at her place because I was staying there for a bit over a week or something. And I felt more like, just in the way. So I said to her, okay, you know what? I made some money at this, thing. So, I'm just going to go to a hostel and then I'll see from there. So I went to this hostel, and then I was quite low on money already. And at that hostel, you could you could work for them in exchange for a night stay. So you would help clean the toilets, whatever, and then they will give you one free night. So I signed up for this, but then they didn't have any space because everyone wanted to do this because, as I said, all backpackers are pretty skinned. So they all want to have free nights. Yeah, then I was really close to running out of money, like really, really close. I maybe had $50 left. And then I saw this ad on Gumtree, which is, it's like a website where you can post. It's like Craigslist, if you know. It's like a website where you can post messages. Other people can respond to you. It's for jobs, like one-off jobs or something like that. So I saw this other hostel in Perth and they were looking for a web developer. They wanted to have some new changes to their WordPress website and everything. So I thought, okay, I can do a bit of programming. So I wrote them and then they invited me over for an interview. And the hostel owner was a German guy and we were talking and everything. And he said, okay, you seem to be all right. So I'm going to give you this room and then I'll talk to you the next few days and then we'll sort out what we want to do for the website. Over the next few days, the guy explained to me he wanted to add some widgets to his website to add some booking interface, whatever. And then a couple of days later, the hostel was on fire. So the front of the hostel, we had this electricity box, and it was on fire. And you know, hostels, especially with European backpackers, we're usually having drinks in the garden somewhere. So everyone's drunk, having fun, smoking. And then all of a sudden there's a guy and he's like, yo, it's on fire. And I'm like, what do you mean it's on fire? He's like, yeah, there's a fire. So I was like, okay, wait, I'll go have a look. And I saw the flames and everything. And I run back to everyone and say, okay, guys, we need to go. Like, there's actually a fire. So we went out and then two fire trucks came and they extinguished it. And then because the German guy was a hostel manager. So then the owner of the property, he came and he fired the manager. Whoa. So my project was to work with the German guy on the website, but the hostel owner did not know about this. So now my job was like, I was just staying there. I didn't really have a job because, you know, nobody wanted to do the website anymore. So there was a new owner coming and, he was trying to, make clear, like, who was working and who wasn't, because there were a lot of people working there. Some people were doing reception, night reception, everything. And then we were all like, yo, what are we going to tell him about me? I was the website guy, you know, what should I do? And then luckily one other guy, he wanted to leave. So we said, okay, we'll just say that the old manager has hired you to take over his role, the night reception. So I was like, okay, that's good because I need to have accommodation because again, I didn't have that much money. I didn't have a job. And I could stay there for free accommodation, but still I need to pay for my food. So at least I had accommodation. So I took over the night reception and I would have to work from 11 p.m. to 7 in the morning. And then, yeah, whoever comes in, I just help them. But mostly at that time, it's a party place, you know, so usually there's not much happening at the reception. So usually as a receptionist, you just go join the other people, have some drinks, smoke some weed, and then nothing would happen. You would maybe have one check-in or something, and that's it. But sometimes you would have no check-in. So it was fine. Usually all the guys on the night reception, we would just smoke, drink, and then that was fine. You just sleep, and then you wake up, okay, my shift is over. Yeah. So, of course, we had other tasks that we need to do. We need to clean the toilets at night. We need to clean the kitchen because another thing in hostels in Australia or in any hostel in the world probably is that nobody does their dishes. So you would have to clean up all these dishes, clean the floor, clean up all the crap that people leave behind. So I was doing that. And then I couldn't get a job for maybe a month or 2 months. And the only jobs I got was through Gumtree, through their website, where I would help out somebody with his garden. for one day. So that would pay me some money so that I could at least buy food. And then eventually I was so demotivated. I just went to the library every day and I started just looking for jobs, but also I started working on a website. I wanted to build a website where people could find jobs. Yeah. So this was a specific website. You know, we have to do those 3 months to get the second year in Australia. So I wanted to make a job website where people could find jobs that, would count for those 3 months so that every backpacker could go there and then, get that 3 months to get to stay another year. But yeah, I wasn't that skilled of a programmer. So it was bigger than I thought it was. And then eventually one of my friends, she was a German girl. She said, oh, I'm going to leave. And, my restaurant is looking for another, dishwasher. But it's all the way in Joondalup, and Joondalup is like 1 hour north of Perth. But I thought, okay, whatever, I need a job. So I took this job and started doing dishwashing like 4 days in a week. But the good thing in Australia is that if you work on Sundays, you get paid double. So on Sundays, I would get, I think the job base pay was $18 an hour, but then on Sunday, $36 an hour. So I would always try to make a lot of hours and I could save up a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And then I met another girl. So I met a German girl, and she was staying at my hostel. Oh, actually, she was a friend of somebody that was staying at the hostel. And we met one night and then we got each other's number and we decided to hang out and everything. And we were talking about going on a road trip. So, yeah, I was working at the dishwasher, saved up some money. And then we had enough money and she had enough money. And then we decided, okay, let's go buy a car with maybe some other backpackers. So we were posting online. So in Australia, we have a lot of Facebook groups mm-hmm. for backpackers. So we just say, hey, guys, we want to do a road trip to Darwin from Perth. Anybody wants to buy a car with us? And then we'll go there together. We'll sell the car. And that, then...
Why not rent a car?
It's very expensive. It's cheaper to buy a car. Yeah. It's
cheaper to buy a car.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Way cheaper. Because there's a lot of backpackers. So there are backpacker cars. So they are good cars. I mean, but mm-hmm. they have been used a lot and have some hidden things that are broken. But that's okay. So we bought a car together with a French guy. And then we did a road trip to Darwin. And yeah, we stopped a lot of places on the way there. And the cool thing is that the supply and demand of backpackers in Australia is different in every city. So in Perth, for example, there's a lot of backpackers. So the cars are cheaper because there's more competition. Whereas in Darwin, they don't have a lot of cars. So we drove our car up. So we bought our car for $3,500. We drove to Darwin and then we sold it for $5,000. So we made a profit. Yeah. And then, yeah, we made a profit with that. And then me and my girlfriend, we flew to Sydney and we went to a festival.
So when you bought the car, why didn't you go to Sydney?
Because driving from Perth to Darwin takes 3 weeks. Driving from Darwin to Sydney
takes how much?
3 weeks.
Is it possible? 3 weeks?
3 weeks.
Three weeks you can get to moon.
Yeah, no. Okay, so you stop on the way, of course. So mm-hmm. obviously you sleep in places, but I think the distance is huge.
It's, how many kilometers?
I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure, but it's thousands.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So driving from Darwin to Sydney is another giant leg of
distance. Yeah, we're talking about the continent.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we flew to Sydney because she was really into hardstyle. Hardstyle is like a Dutch electronic music thing. And in Netherlands, we have a lot of festivals around this hardstyle, hardcore and techno, all these things. She's really into it. And the cool thing is in Sydney, they also have a Australian version of that Dutch festival. It's called DEFCON 1. So we had DEFCON 1 Netherlands, DEFCON 1 Australia, which is in Sydney. So she wanted to go there. So we went there And then after the festival, we took a bus to Canberra, which is the capital of Australia. We stayed there. We did couchsurfing there with a really nice guy. He just gave us his house and then he was like, okay, I'll leave you guys. Enjoy. And we only stayed there for a couple of days and then we went to Melbourne. And in Melbourne, we stayed for 3 months. Yeah. So in Melbourne, I lived just across the river in a suburb called South Melbourne. And I was working there.
Why did you get back? At this point, what are you looking for?
For us, it was more like, okay, a couple months we work and then we travel for a couple months. So that was what we wanted. So after Melbourne, her visa was ending. So we knew, okay, the next step is what? We have been all over Australia already. So the next logical place is New Zealand. So for those 3 months, we saved up all the money that we could. We worked a lot and everything. And then we went to New Zealand and we went to Wellington in New Zealand, which is the capital. And then we tried to get jobs there.
New Zealand, I only know...
Auckland.
Auckland.
Yeah. Yeah, Auckland is the biggest city. But Wellington is the... It's in the lower side of the North Island. It's the capital city. And Auckland is a bit more north. But we thought, okay, let's go Wellington. Wellington is a really nice city. So we thought, you know, let's get a job here. It's an amazing city. People are cool and everything. But then it's really hard to get a job there, especially as a backpacker, because... I think they prefer Kiwis. They prefer their own people more rather than some annoying backpacker.
This is backpacking is not as common as Australia and New Zealand.
Yeah, I would say so. I would say so. I think it's not as common for backpackers to take up normal jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to get normal jobs. So for me, I wanted to get an IT job. I thought, okay, I can keep doing these manual jobs and everything, but it's not going to help me in the rest of my life. And I think at that point I knew, okay, I want to go back into programming or software or something. So I wanted to get a normal job. So I applied for a lot of normal IT jobs, but nobody would reply or take me. And then, she also could not get a job. She wanted to just get a waitress job, but she also couldn't get it. So then we were like, okay, you know what? Let's just go to Auckland. And then in Auckland, we can see it's a bigger city. There's probably more work there. So we took a bus to Auckland and then stayed at a hostel. And it was a really scruffy hostel. But it was okay. There was free food every night. So that was good for us. You know, we want to save money. And then she ended up getting a job at a Canadian restaurant. Silver lining. No. Yeah, at a Canadian restaurant. And yeah, that was really nice. And then I ended up getting a job at a Microsoft partner. So I really wanted to get an IT job, but it took me about a month to get a job. And you know, when you're looking for jobs and you don't get any reply from anyone, you get really depressed. But anyway, I went to the library every morning because they had free internet. So I would bring my laptop and go to the library, search for jobs, send out applications. And that's pretty much what I did for a month. And then I became desperate because, you know, money is running out. So I posted on Reddit, on New Zealand Reddit.
Reddit?
Yeah. And I said...
Yeah, it's so desperate.
Yeah, yeah. But it worked. So... yeah, so I posted there in the Auckland group. And then I said, hey, guys, like, I'm a backpacker here. I'm just looking for any kind of job, like anything that pays. And then these guys called me from this Microsoft thing. And they were like, hey, why don't you come over for an interview? You know, we like it that you post here and everything. I was like, okay, sure. You know, that's exactly what I wanted. You know, IT job, Microsoft. And then... yeah, so I went to the interview and then they said, okay, we have a marketing position for you, marketing assistant. And I said, okay, I mean, I'll take it. You know,
marketing?
Anything.
I cannot imagine you in marketing at all.
So yeah, I was doing that. And then they said, okay, you know, we want you to like be active on forums and then be active on Twitter, Facebook.
That's what they were interested in you. send that message on Reddit.
Maybe, yeah. So they basically wanted to build their online presence, and they wanted like young people to help them with that. So the company itself, they were selling like Office 365 managed subscriptions. So basically a company would come to them and say, hey, we want to have an IT infrastructure, but we don't have an IT department. So they would say, okay, we'll do it. So they would provide these services to them. But I found it always so
boring.
Okay, I definitely was not a fan of Microsoft. I've never been. I mean, of their products, at least. I mean, for me, it makes sense to use Google Docs because it just works, you know. But then the managers there was a CEO. And he was always talking about amazing big things, but I did not really see it in the company itself. And the manager, he would have one-on-ones with us, but it was about nothing. It was more about him talking and about how amazing the company was. So I really felt cringy going there. And also they require you to dress up appropriately. So I was wearing dress shoes, dress pants, and then button up shirt every day. And I remember because I was staying in the city in Auckland, and every morning I had to walk on the street with those dress shoes, and you can hear the sound tick, tick, tick. And I can see the homeless people sitting there, and I feel like such an asshole, you know? So I didn't feel nice in that job. So I said to the guy in our one-on-one, I said, I'm not sure if this is for me. Like, I think for me, maybe it's better to do something else than this. And then he was like, okay, just think about it. And then, you know,
we'll it's how see. Long after they hired you?
Only 1 month.
Only yeah, 1 month. Yeah.
So only 1 month and, was it 1 month? Yeah, I think it was 1 month. And then, I kind of already knew my answer. I did not want to stay there. It was just so cringy to mm-hmm. be there every day. And, so I quit. And then again, I didn't have a job for a month. And then I kind of gave up on getting the IT job. And so I started like branching out to other fields. And then I saw this job for a warehouse. So I thought, okay, you know, I have experience in the warehouse, so maybe I can just do that. At least it's a job that pays me. And this was for a department store, very old department store. It's called Smith & Coe's. I went for an interview with them. They hired me. And then basically that building is so old. It's one of the oldest buildings in Auckland, and their warehouse is like underground. So that was my pretty much my surroundings for almost a year. I would work underground and bring all the stock up to the floors, to all the departments and everything.
Oh, suddenly after one thing that you left after a month, now we have something that you spend time for a year?
Yeah, because the thing is, I cannot not keep working, right? There needs to be money coming in, because we rented a place. So that needs to be paid. I cannot ask my girlfriend to pay for that. So yeah, eventually then some money needs to come in. So that's why, you know.
And it seems to be something similar to your first job.
Yeah, exactly. It was pretty much. I mean, we would get a truck in the morning. We would unload it with forklift. I knew how to use it. Mm-hmm. So they were happy with that. And then we would just sort out the goods coming in, and we would help in a web shop again. And it was pretty simple, but they liked how I was working, so all good.
1 year in New Zealand, it seems that you enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, it's very beautiful. It's, I mean, the people that I met there are amazing, and I don't know, like...
The environment I've heard is so beautiful.
It's just really out of this place. It's just so nice. It's very beautiful, yeah.
And compared to Australia.
It's different than Australia. Nature is very different. I mean, Australia is just so huge, and they have desert and huge rock formations and everything. But New Zealand, the climate is colder, so it just has that Middle Earth feeling, you know, to it. So, yeah, that's what I really liked. Yeah.
1 year.
1 year in New Zealand, and then we flew to a really small island. It's called the Cook Islands. The Cook Islands.
Where is it?
The Cook Islands is, you know, Fiji and I heard about Fiji. Samoa, Tonga, all these places. They're all small Pacific islands.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not too far away from New Zealand and Australia. So we ended our 1 year visa in New Zealand. And then we went to the Cook Islands for 2 weeks, I believe. And Cook Islands used to be governed by the New Zealand government. So they use New Zealand dollar, everything, but it's a different country. So we said, okay, let's...
It's a country?
Yeah, yeah, wow. It's a country. But it's you can go around in less than an hour, I believe.
The whole country.
The whole country, yeah, yeah. So we went there, and then we knew our visa is ending in New Zealand. So let's go out of New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
go to Cook Islands, and then we can come back. And we get 3 months on a tourist visa. So in that, when we went to Cook Islands, we did some tourism stuff, and then we came back, and then we started traveling New Zealand. So 1 year, we saved up a lot of money. Yeah. So we saved up a lot of money at the warehouse. I wrote some software for them as well, which I sold to them, and they paid a lot of money for this. So we had good money.
It seems that this was your first successful programming experience after you left the college.
I think first professional, I mean, mm-hmm. quote unquote. So at the end of that year of working there, we had a lot of money. So we could travel in New Zealand for 3 months, do almost everything that we wanted to do, go bungee jumping, go on this tour, go take this boat, everything. And, then after that, we went to Southeast Asia, and then we traveled around Asia for more than a year without working. Yeah.
With the money of the software.
With the money of the software. Yeah, pretty much.
So just to recap, then after a year, you went to Cook Island. What was the island? The
Cook Islands.
Cook Islands. Yeah. And then you came back to New Zealand for 3 months. You traveled around the country.
Yeah.
And then after that, you came to Asia, Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
So which specifically?
We first arrived in the Philippines. So
why you didn't go back home?
I mean, you know, as I said at the start of this conversation, there have been so many issues in my family when I was young.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I didn't like my school that much. Also, I've been away for so long. So friendships kind of fade. And I also really like traveling, really like experiencing something that is not normal. Not that it's weird mm-hmm. or something, but normal as in...
Something new, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So... The plan was that, okay, after New Zealand, you know, we've done Australia, we've done New Zealand. After Asia, we should go home. That was the plan. So I was still together with a German girl that I met in Perth in the hostel. So we were together for almost 2 years
mm-hmm.
in New Zealand. And then we went to Philippines first. So we went to, where did we go? We went to Cebu. And then we did some island hopping there. I cannot remember all the places. We went to Bohol, Sikihor, Dumaguete, and some other places there. And then after the Philippines, we went to Singapore. So we spent, I think, about a week in Singapore. And then after Singapore, we went to... Where did we go after Singapore? I think we went to Malaysia. Yeah, I think we went to Malaysia. We're here for a month. And then we traveled to all the normal places. So we went to Kuala Lumpur, Cameron Highlands, Penang, Perhentians, Malacca. We went to all these places. And then after that, we went to Bali. Her mom came to visit us in Bali. So she traveled with us. So we were there for a month. And then for 2 weeks, I was with my girlfriend and her mom. And in 2 weeks, I just rented a motorbike and just drove around Bali by myself and stayed at some places. And after Bali, we went to Vietnam. Vietnam, we did the same. We started in Ho Chi Minh City. And then we took, they have buses, really very comfortable buses. So we went from Ho Chi Minh City all the way north to Hanoi and then Sapa as well, which is close to China almost. And then from Vietnam, we went to Cambodia, went to Phnom Penh, the capital, and then we went to Siem Reap to see Angkor Wat. And then we went to what is left? Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
I guess that's everything in there.
Yeah. So after Cambodia, we went back to Thailand. So in Thailand, we found a place where we could volunteer in return for accommodation. And
in return for accommodation, what do you mean?
So it basically means that you help them out with some project and mm-hmm. then they will give you free room to stay. So, okay. So basically, this means that
it seems that the money was over.
No, we were very efficient. So my girlfriend was German and Dutch people are also very, I don't want to say stingy, but we're very good with money, you know? Mm-hmm. So if it comes to those things, we know how to save money. So we thought, okay, at that point, we figured out that we can make money online. So my girlfriend, she was teaching German online to anyone in the world. So, and she would have like returning people, some Russians, some English people, whatever, anywhere in the world, they would come to her and learn German. And I would, write some programming stuff. And, it was data scraping, something like that. But we thought that, okay, if we, stay at a place, we can work a couple hours for that project, because the deal usually is, you work 4 hours in the day, you get free accommodation. So this project was to help take care of some ex-street dogs. So this was a lady, Scottish lady. She lived in a very small town called Kuraburi. It's like in the south of Thailand. It's maybe 1 hour north of Phuket, I think, something like that. So she had a house there. Like, I mean, more like a cabin in the woods. And she had five dogs there that used to live in the street, but she would take them in. And then we would take care of these dogs. And she, the Scottish lady herself, she was in another town, like 1 hour away from there. And she would have a resort and she had to work there and everything. So we would take care of the dogs and then help fix some stuff.
For 4 hours.
Well, it's dogs, so it's the entire day. So mm-hmm. whenever they want to go for a walk, so it was really nice because five dogs, they're the sweetest things ever. And then you wake up in the morning, they're knocking on the door. They want you to come out and go for a walk with them. So you go on a walk and it was like in the middle of a forest. So we would climb up the hill and then you would have a nice view over the entire forest. We would have a waterfall as a garden and the dogs, there's no leashes or anything. They would just walk with you. And yeah, so we were there for a while. So we thought that, okay, we can take care of the dogs. If they need us, we can just quickly switch to that, but we can still do our own work. So we really loved it. The Scottish lady really loved us. The dogs really loved us. So she said, oh, you guys can stay as long as you want. And yeah, so then we ended up staying there for like 7 months. Yeah, in the middle of like a very small town in Thailand where nobody speaks English. There's a couple of, questionable Western characters in the town, which you'll find often in Thailand. There's always
questionable characters.
There's always some really old German guy with a really young girlfriend, or there was an English guy who was mentally not okay. So there's a lot of different figures there. But besides that, there were mainly Thai people just living their life in their little town and everything. But it was very nice. The people were very friendly to us. And there was, at one point there was a English teacher. She was our age, so we'd hang out with her a lot. And then there were some South African teachers as well. So we would often sit together and have, as the South Africans would say it, called a braai, which is a barbecue. So we would just barbecue all together, smoke and drink. So that was really nice. And
so it was mostly just walking the dogs and then going, hanging around with the friends.
Yeah, it was mostly that and trying to figure out what we wanted, because she really wanted to go home. She was 5 years older than me. So back then I was, I don't know, she was 30 already, I think. So I must have been 25. Yeah. So she was like getting ready to go home, you know, and settle down and everything. And I didn't really feel that way. At first I was like, yeah, of course I want to follow you and go home as well. But then something inside me said, no, I actually kind of like this lifestyle of going to new places and experiencing new things. So over the months that started building up, you know, we started getting into arguments and everything. And then eventually we kind of realized, okay, we kind of have different ideas of what we want to do. And then we did, then we said, okay, you know what? Let's just end it, you know, where it is now. And at least we can look back and we had such a nice time together. We traveled so much together, everything. And yeah, so that's when we broke up, but we still stayed together in the same place because she felt like she wasn't ready to go home. I still wanted to save a bit more money and figure out where I wanted to go. And then after a couple months, I dropped her off at the bus station. Oh no, actually, no, that was when she went on a holiday. But we went to the airport together, but she was flying to another place in Thailand and I flew to Malaysia after this. So we said goodbye at the airport. That was very emotional and pretty sad. And then, yeah.
After about more than 2 years.
After 2.5 years of being together 24/7, pretty much every day. And then,
the path separated.
Yeah. Different goals, different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
And you said you decided to come to Malaysia.
Yeah, because I was looking for a place where it would be easy to meet other people. And we had been in Malaysia for 1 month. And when we were here, everyone was super friendly to us. And we could talk to anyone because everyone here speaks English. So I thought, you know, it'll be an easy place for me to stay for a while. Everyone could speak English. So I thought, okay, that'll be good for me. Then I can at least talk to people and everything. So then I went back to their website, Help Exchange, through which I found the farm as well in Australia. And because they have posts for everywhere in
the world.
In the world, yeah. So literally every country has some place where you can go to. So I wanted to find one in KL. And then I found this one place. It was called the Oriental Heritage House, and it's based in Sentul, in close to KL here. And it's like an old Chinese house that some family has inherited from their parents or their grandparents. And they film a lot of movies and TV commercials there. So if you see like a Maggie commercial during Chinese New Year's, they will probably have filmed it there. So I was staying at the house and my job was to make sure that the house is always clean. And if the film crew would come, I would help them go into the rooms. I basically was the key master because they could not go into every room themselves. So, but it was really cool because the house would be empty one day. It was super clean.
You had access to everywhere.
Yeah. And then the next day the film crew would come, and this is not a small crew. This is like 50 plus 100 people. So they would come, build up their tents, be everywhere in the house. But they were really cool. And they would bring food and invite us for food and have food with them and smoke with them and everything. Yeah, it's like something that keeps coming back.
And I assume, yeah. And I assume you met some famous people?
Probably, but I don't know them because it's mostly Mandarin movies. So, I mean, I don't really know any actors from there, but yeah, there was some actors and actresses that we spoke to, but I don't know who they were. I just saw the TV commercial for Maggie a couple of years back. I knew I was there when they filmed it, but obviously I wasn't there in the movie, in the commercial, but yeah, you could recognize the actors. So yeah, I was doing that. And then I met some interesting people. One of them was a old German lady. She's like 62, and I'm still in contact with her today. Like she's really an inspiration because she has been traveling around the world for years. She has lived in India for 40 plus years. She has traveled. She's always traveling. Always when I call her now, she's still somewhere traveling. Now she's stuck in Australia. But basically she is a feng shui master. So feng shui means that she can see the energies in your house and then set up your furniture in a way where the right energies flow to you. So, she will make like a diagram and then she will say that, okay, if you sleep in this part of the house, then, more happiness will come to you or more, success or something like that. I don't know too much about it, but yeah.
She truly need her help.
Yeah. Yeah. You do. Yeah. I can see that. No. No, but yeah. So she does that. And also she does like healing for people. So, she has a couple clients and they pay her every month, everything. And, I mean, I wanted to say all she does, but I'm sure it is a job. So she, wakes up in the morning and then she meditates and she tries to channel energy to these people, good energy. So they have a good life and everything. So she does this. Yeah. So I met her at that place. I met some, Ukrainian people as well. And, I met a Algerian girl. She was working there. And yeah, a lot of different people working there. But then eventually, at that time, right after the end of Thailand and at the beginning of Malaysia, this was about 2017, December. So I found out that I can make a lot of money selling cryptocurrency. So, and just this time, 2017, December, it was probably one of the best times to make money in crypto.
It was a time that it went up to 20,000, I guess, or yeah. Before that.
Yeah, it went up like crazy. And there was a lot of like people that thought, okay, I need to buy now because else I'm going to miss out on the moon, you know? So what I figured out is that... But yeah.
So this was another adventure.
Yeah, another adventure.
Until I guess you decided to having a normal... sort of a life?
Yeah. In Malaysia, because I started freelancing, so I thought, okay, I can live I can live for 3 months in Malaysia, then I go to Thailand for a couple months, then I go here for a couple months. So that was my plan. So I stayed in Malaysia for 3 months, and then I was making good money with the freelancing as well. And then I went to Thailand for 1 month. And then I stayed at this hostel there, and the hostel was so nice. The people that were there, they were all digital nomads. You know, we were all working online, everything. And so, it was so nice because it was people from China, Indonesia. There was a Paraguay guy. There was an Indian guy as well. And just all kinds of different people. We all working online. One was selling products on WeChat. One was a professional poker player, a French guy. One was a web developer. I was doing a bit of web development as well. So we were all there together during the day. We work, we go for lunch together, and at night we have beers together, everything. So I really loved it. So I extended my visa in Thailand for another month. You can do that in the country. So you just pay some money and then they extend it. And yeah.
It seems like a good place that you could stay for a long time.
Yeah, I would love to stay there for a long time. But the visa is annoying because...
Every month you have to update it?
So you have a maximum of 3 months that you can stay. Because you can either go to the embassy in Malaysia or anywhere and get a two-month visa.
Embassy in Thailand or...?
No, you have to go... You have to be out of Thailand. Then you apply for a two-month visa.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're in Thailand, you can extend once. So... Mm-hmm. Or you can just fly into Thailand, you get 1 month visa, and then you can extend once as well. But then after that month, you have to go out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it was annoying.
I mean, for long term, if you want to stay there long term, it's a bit annoying. So what a lot of Europeans do is they study there. So study can also mean be a Muay Thai fighter. You get a student visa for this, yeah.
A study at university.
Yeah, but no, this also counts. You can be a chef even. So there's a lot of...
Can study fighting, become a fighter?
I mean, Muay Thai is very national sport there. So they consider it as something you can study. Yeah. And you can be a chef as well. So there's all kinds of ways you can try and stay there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The good old days before Corona.
Yeah. 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 And then, yeah, in the last year, I cannot really say a lot. I've pretty much been sitting at home or in the office. No.
Okay. So it seems that you were roaming around. I mean, from one country to another country, wandering. So everything seems fine. And it seems that the way that you want to continue for, I don't know how long.
Yeah. I mean, eventually, you need to think about your future as well. So you cannot always keep traveling around and moving from one place to another, because there's a couple of things that happen. One is that you're never going to build deep friendships because you are constantly moving, and you will never, spend that much time with a person that you can really get a deep connection. Another thing is that you cannot keep switching jobs. Even to this day, when I apply for jobs, people ask me, oh, you work for 3 months here, then 6 months there, then 1 year here. How? You know, what have you been doing? Why are you like being fired or something like that? So that doesn't help you in your career. And also to build your career, you need experience. And it's better to build that experience once you're a bit younger. I mean, and not wait until you're 40 and you're that creepy backpacker guy that's still in a hostel, you know. You don't want to end up like that. So that's why eventually, I ended up getting a job here. And I really like it. I mean, I really learned so much in the 2 years. I'm very enthusiastic about what I'm doing now. Yeah.
Any plans going back to Netherlands?
Yeah, actually, I have a flight at the start of February, but I'm probably not going. I'm probably postponing this flight because my brother, he's having a baby with his girlfriend. So I wanted to go back, but then I changed my mind because of a couple of reasons. First is that it's a pandemic and I know I can fly, but I don't think it's right to fly because maybe other people also want to go home, but they cannot go home. So that's one thing. Another thing is that I will be stuck in Netherlands because the border in Malaysia is not open yet. So, and then our company, they will reduce your salary. They will not contribute to your super or your EPF. Those are all things to take into consideration. And then also in Netherlands, we have a total lockdown. So even when my brother does have a baby, I cannot actually go there because I don't want to bring anything to the baby. So probably I'll go home end of this year. I mean, I'll postpone my flight until end of this year, but maybe I'll go back like mid of this year. I just hope the vaccinations and everything will happen soon.
Yeah. You see, the reason that I ask is that after a year, I was wondering, and all these places that you've been, where is the place that you kind of miss? Although I guess you're kind of okay with the place that you're right now, but as a kind of recap, okay, all these places that you've been, now for a year you're stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
What place you miss?
Thailand, Bangkok, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not because of dodgy reasons. I mean, Bangkok has a lot more to offer than just those things. No, because that was the part where I was telling about the hostel, you know, all the digital nomads were there. We all hang out together, work together and have beers together. So that time was really nice because it was just, you know, what I really like about backpacking and being in hostels is that people are not judgmental at all. Like they just accept you for who you are. Whatever you're doing is fine. Whatever you look like is fine. If you have money, you're fine. If you don't have money, it's fine as well. And people look after each other as well. So if they see you're sad, they will ask you. Whereas, you know, normally that doesn't happen that often in regular life. So that time I definitely miss. Which other time? I mean, just the traveling as well, because all the working aside, the traveling part is always so nice because you see so many different things. And just spending time in a car, driving somewhere, just sitting there and not even talking to other people, but just sitting there, being in your own mind and just, I don't know. I don't know what's happening.
Watching from window, nice. The things are passing by.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's definitely something I miss.
Oh, what a year. So you ended up here and these things happened.
Yeah. You brought it all with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know. The year started really good. Like, one of my friends was working in Jakarta and their company gives them free flights and a free hotel and everything. It's a good hotel. It's a 5-star hotel, everything. So she would always fly me over every week to Jakarta. So every week in January of this year, last year, I went to Jakarta. But then slowly people started wearing masks and people started talking about Corona. And then all of a sudden we had the lockdown.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was
a strange experience. It seems, did we record an episode?
I surely hope so.
I don't know. It's, wow. That wasn't the plan, but it seems that
I got carried away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was Aaron.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to add?
No, that's too much already.
Yeah, that's just too much already.
It's just me talking. No.
Someone can listen.
Yeah.
He was accusing me.
I heard your references. People say you're always talking. So I thought, okay, I'll just overpower this conversation and not let you talk at all.
And this is the first time that I'm recording in this configuration, this certain configuration. I mean, two mics, recorder, kind of professional recording. So yeah. And it was very good experience. It was very nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Let's listen back and then we'll see.
Yeah. Okay.
To be selfishly, can I just say, I wish I could just be in things and no one ask me about it.
Yeah.
Because to me, the magic and the mystery of it is just if you don't know too much. And I think we're losing that more and more because we so want to talk about the process and this and that.
Look, I'm only going to ask you process questions from now on.
Well, I've always said, who needs Ambien when you have a comedian talking about his process? You know?